Shut up and sit down.
Hey, you reached Coach Lundy with episode 5 of Fourth Down Focus. I have a great guest today in Coach David Walker, a coach that's coached at all levels of football, Friday, Saturday, and Sunday. In his time doing so, he has really come to fall in love with, if you will, the thought of winning that third of the game that is often neglected, and that's fourth down, that's special teams. How you doing, Coach?
I'm doing great. Great to be here. Looking forward to the next few minutes together.
Absolutely. I want to get right into it. You know, I want to talk about several things. I want to start the show off by talking about your background and your coaching career a little bit, and then obviously where you are now, how you've transitioned out of the game as a coach directly, but what you're doing on the back end to help the game progress to where it should go. So if you could briefly just touch on the start of your timeline, where you started, where you went, and where you are now.
Okay. Well, I'll go back just a little bit further. I'm a graduate of Syracuse University, played ball there, played for a coach named Paul Pasqualoni my junior and senior year. And so I'll preface that way. After I left Syracuse, I tried to play. I wasn't good enough to have a professional career, and then got into coaching. My first job was down in Miami at Carroll City High School in 1994. And we had a young man who was a sophomore in a program named Santana Moss that ended up blossoming and played at Miami and went on to have a nice career with the Washington Redskins. But Santana was one of those kids that we had in the program early on. After that 94 season, I had a chance to go back up to Syracuse. And initially, I was going to go up as a graduate assistant. And that particular season, five coaches had left the staff up at Syracuse. And so Paul Pasqualoni, who I played for, actually hired me full time. So I had a lot of on the job training in terms of being a coach. I knew the offense. I could get guys to go in the right direction, so to speak. But in terms of learning how to coach them, that was probably about a two-year process to get that really rolling. But was at Syracuse from 95 to 2004. At the end of the 2004 season, Coach Pasqualoni got let go. And so I took a job with Dave Wanstead and the Pittsburgh Panthers. We were in Pittsburgh from 2005 to 2010. After the 2010 season, we got let go at Pitt, and then briefly got hired by Randy Etzel, who was the head coach at the University of Maryland at the time. And I say briefly, Randy probably hired me, he probably hired me on like January 3rd, and I got a phone call from Jim Caldwell on maybe January 17th or January 18th and started working for the Indianapolis Colts maybe on February 6th or 7th. So I was at Maryland for about a month. Randy was great in terms of allowing me to have an opportunity to have some conversations with Jim Caldwell, who was a coach with the Indianapolis Colts at that time. And things went well. And it had been at that point in my career a goal to see if I could get to the NFL. And so it was in Indianapolis from 2011 to 2014. At the end of the 2014 season, I got released. Still had a year on my contract. So the 2015 football season, I volunteered at our local high school. I'm in Indianapolis. So I worked at Carmel High School where my kids went to school, and had an opportunity to coach my oldest son the 2015 season. And then after that season, Jim Caldwell, who had left Indianapolis, went to Baltimore, then was up in Detroit. He hired me up in Detroit, and I worked up in Detroit from 2016, 17, 18. At the end of the 2018 season, you know, I made the decision to walk away from coaching for a couple different reasons. But, you know, some family issues had arose that I felt I needed to take care of a little bit more. And so stepped away at the end of the 2018 season, started working with the recruiting service called Tracking Football at, you know, the beginning of 2019, and worked with those guys for about a year or so. And then recently this past spring, started my own company called Third and Three, which is a consulting company. And we actually coach high school and college coaches doing clinic presentations and helping guys grow within the profession. So that's kind of been my my journey since I started this thing. And like I said, I've been at every level. I've coached at two really, really good high school programs, coached at college programs in Syracuse and Pitt on the East Coast that when we were there, sent a lot of guys to the National Football League, and then was fortunate to work in Indianapolis with the Colts and up in Detroit with the Lions.
Wow, that's a quite an extensive career. When we met, and we met not too long ago, I feel like I've known you for a bit, but it's really been less than a month. We met each other, and I think the kids need to hear this, the importance of social media. You know, that's where you found me and I found you indirectly, and that's where our initiation began. Found a way to get online here and there on Zoom and get better and talk about what we're both passionate about, which is football. But I think that the audience needs to hear that. Could you elaborate a little bit about what your specialty is, in fact, in? You're not a specialist coach, but you have been around the game long enough to see the value, and we'll talk about that as the show progresses. But could you kind of elaborate as to what it is that you feel that you have spent most of your time doing and getting better with in terms of football?
Yep. So I've been a career-long running back coach and was a running back in college and have always coached that position. Was fortunate enough to, you know, I've been around some really good players, and sometimes good players make you a better coach. To develop a lot of guys, I think through my stretch, if you look at the top rushers in Syracuse University's football history, I've probably coached half of them, you know. And then when you go and look at the University of Pittsburgh, we had a stretch with LaShawn McCoy, who's still playing on Sundays, Deion Lewis, who's still playing on Sundays, Henry Hanoski, who early in his professional career won a Super Bowl with the New York Giants. We had a nice stretch there. I think we might have had two Big East Offensive Player of the Years in LaShawn McCoy, then Deion Lewis back-to-back. And then in the professional game, I've been around some really good guys, you know, the guys that stand out to me for different reasons, the Joe Adais of the world in Indianapolis, the Donald Browns, the Theo Riddicks, the Amir Abdullahs, you know, guys that have all, you know, had nice careers and have done really well for themselves. So running back has been my specialty, but along with that comes, you know, parts of special teams that majority of running back coaches are on, whether it's you're helping coach on the kickoff return unit or you're working with the return game and the returners, the kickoff or punt returners on a regular basis. And through my career, I've done all of that. So I've got a really good appreciation for the special teams and the return phases of the special teams, just based on the position I've worked with.
Excellent. I've been, you know, around the game for about 20 years now, 25 as a player and a coach, and I've seen personally the perspective on special teams and how it is used to win games. I've seen it change, and it's for the better. However, I wanted your opinion, because you've been doing it twice as long as me. But where have you seen it progress? Where have you seen the...
Yeah, I'll start with my most recent stops, and I'll work backwards from there, because I think when you're talking about on Sundays in the National Football League, everybody pays a high premium towards special teams. There's not a team in the league on Sundays that has a different view. You're going to get great specialists, number one, which is something you don't always see in college and in high school. You're going to have great specialists, but also you're going to have detailed coaching. You're going to have detailed game plans. You're going to see things from a return game and from a punt block standpoint that are going to challenge your concepts. So there's not a huge, in my opinion, there's not a huge difference between what wins and loses games in the NFL on Sundays with special teams. Because everybody's putting a great deal of time and emphasis in those things. I think when you start to step down to college and high school, to me, that's where I've really seen the differences of the importance placed on those units. When I worked at Syracuse University, the special teams phase was equal to the offense and defense phase. Now, everybody will say that and preach that, but their actions don't always show that based on the personnel that's used on those teams. And then I've seen where the emphasis on special teams from a philosophy standpoint and the personnel that's used is not quite the same. And both philosophies are good, but like I said, when I was at Syracuse University as a player and then under Coach Pasqualoni, when I coached with him, our starters on offensive and defense were our starters on special teams if they were the best person for that job. So special teams wasn't, hey, we're going to let this redshirt freshman kind of get acclimated to college football and we're going to put him as an R4 on kickoff and let him run down the field. Now, if he was the best player, certainly. If he was not the best player, then his butt was on the sideline. So the special teams there was the best players playing. And I'll give you an example of what I mean. In 1997, the 1997 football season, we had a safety named Donovan Darius, who ended up being a first-round draft pick with the Jacksonville Jaguars. Donovan was the defensive player of the year in the Big East Conference. And the Big East Conference back then was, you know, Miami and Syracuse and Pitt and Virginia Tech and those teams. It's a little bit different in how the conferences are broke up now. But Donovan was the best defensive player in the conference, was a first-round draft pick as a safety, and he was also the long snapper and would run down on punts. And we probably had the best net punt team in college football with him running down the middle of the field. And we had a guy named Jimmy Turner and another guy, Tabucky Jones, running down as the gunners. And teams had to fair catch the ball or our center made every, you know, our snapper made every tackle. So I've been on that in that same mode. I'm gonna give you one too. We had a kid named Jimmy Turner, who at that time was our second receiver. So he's a starting wide receiver. Jimmy was our kickoff returner. And then Jimmy was our L or R5 on kickoff coverage. So once again, starting wide receiver, kickoff returner, and he played the middle of the kickoff coverage because he was big, fast, and tough, and he would run down and beat the front line and go force the ball. And I remember him, and you think back on certain things, I really remember how good and how our special teams was. We're playing a game. I think it was versus the University of Pittsburgh, but I could be off, but I'm pretty sure it's versus the University of Pittsburgh. He gets a kickoff return for a touchdown. He runs the ball back, touchdown, we score. We kick the extra point. He then goes out and lines up as the five on kickoff coverage and runs down and makes the tackle. And it's like, holy cow, you know, this guy just ran a kickoff return back for a touchdown, gets a sip of water, comes back on the field, then he goes down and covers the kick and makes the tackle. And that kind of symbolizes what special teams meant at that period of time. And you know, we were talking off air, that was the same time with Virginia Tech and Frank Beamer and Beamer Ball, and where they were so, so good. Them and Florida State back in the mid to late 90s were dynamic at blocking kicks. And I think a lot of our philosophy at Syracuse was to match what they were doing at Virginia Tech. And to beat those teams, you had to have your best players on. So I think Frank Beamer and Virginia Tech back at that time, if you played against them, you had to find a way to up your special teams. And at that point, Syracuse was one of those schools that would have their very best players on special teams. And then as you look at other teams, when I was at the University of Pittsburgh, we worked at special teams, but we didn't work at it where our best personnel were those guys that played those spots. You know, that was more for young guys, get kind of indoctrinated into college football, other than the returners for that point. You know, Darrell Revis, for example, was the punt returner. And obviously an outstanding corner, but he did that. But from the other coverage positions and blockers, it was just kind of, you know, put some guys out there and let them play. So two storied programs, but two different philosophies as it pertained to the special teams units in college. And then in high school, I just don't think from my experiences that people understand, not that they don't understand it enough, but don't work on all the little things that go into special teams. And a lot of it is time. You got a little bit more time with the college and the pro to really work on all the little details and all the nuances and be prepared for a lot of the things that could happen to you. Where my experience with the high school is, we did the basics, let's call it. We're a basic special teams unit, not necessarily an expert special teams unit.
Well, a large population of our show, our audience, if you will, is high school coaches, high school players who obviously have aspirations to transition to the next level, whether it be Division I, Division III, whatever. They want to keep playing. They don't want to stop their senior year in high school. They love the sport. They love the game. And I think a disconnect here in transitioning ultimately to Sunday play, to the NFL, is as you progress as an athlete, football player in particular, I think that to be impactful, especially from the get, is to walk on to a Syracuse University or University of Miami and having that background knowledge that, yeah, I've blocked a punt or I've gone after an extra point or I played the R5 or the L1 on kickoff. I've done these things. I have some pre-existing knowledge to where I'm a little more moldable. I'm a more coachable athlete because I've done it before. I may not have done it particularly well because I wasn't coached up in all the intricacies of these things. But do you not agree that these impactful players at the high school level should, in fact, have that special teams experience, regardless of whether or not their coach is very good at coaching the scheme?
Yeah, once again, from my vantage point, I think the more things you can do on a field, the more valuable you become. And as you go up another level, all those things are important unless you happen to be the superstar or the starter on an NFL team. There's not a lot of those when you really break down the numbers. So for a high school kid trying to impress colleges to show he has additional value, let's call it, I think, if I'm watching a film and I see a good running back, but then I also see him run down and cover kicks, or I also see him on the punt protection unit blocking people, then that says to me he may be able to do these things for us at the next level, so I have more value with him. It's the same thing when you're talking to guys leading up to the NFL draft and you have these interviews at the combine. The one thing I always want to know is, did you participate in special teams? Because there's a good chance, unless you're the starter, the starting running back, you're probably going to have to make your money on special teams, or you're going to make the team on special teams. So those things were always important for me. And I know for players, as they try to get to the next level, whatever that next step is, high school to college or college to the pros, the more value you have as a player, the better chances you're going to get to stick at that next level.
That's what I wanted to hear. And I think that should be heard from everyone listening to the show, that I think versatility, if we could put this short and simple, is a versatile athlete is marketable, right? And I think that you have to be more and more versatile and able to do more things if you want to continue to be sought after as it trickles down to the very few who get to play at the highest of levels. I'm going to transition you to a little more fun discussion. You've been around, in my opinion, some goats, right? We call these gentlemen the goats. These are the kids that, even though the two I'm going to mention right now are no longer playing on Sundays, they are 14-year-old kickers who never got to see these guys kick and punt live, but they're still discussed often because they were so effective. But I wanted to ask your opinion on, although these two humans are goats, they are entirely different individuals as far as personality. I wanted you to elaborate about Adam Vinatieri and Pat McAfee, household names in the specialist world, and your time spent around them in Indianapolis at the Colts. I want you to talk about, although they were different, talk about some common things that these two individuals did to prepare to be goats eventually.
Okay. And what I want to do too, I will definitely get to that point, but I want to give some context to what I'll say about them. So in 2011, I get hired by the Indianapolis Colts. And so I'm around in that building. You have Peyton Manning, who is still there, has his neck injury at that time, so is not participating in practices, not playing in preseason games, but is there, and his presence is obviously, amongst the building, and as probably the greatest leader I've ever been around and seen to watch him operate and work on a daily basis. Okay, so I want to say you have Peyton Manning, who you learn to respect and understand why he is who he is. Then we have Reggie Wayne, who is another, you wouldn't necessarily put him in the GOAT family of greatest of all time at his position, but a great, great leader, a great worker, a veteran, who had the respect of everybody in that building and probably everybody's respect in the National Football League, and you had Dwight Freeney. So I need to preface those three guys, Peyton, Reggie, and Dwight, and then you have Adam Vinatieri. So those four guys, in my opinion, for different reasons, you know, I would almost have to pinch myself at times walking out on the practice field. Like seriously, are you out here and you're about to go do ball handling with Peyton, or, you know, you're able to watch Adam's pregame preparation as he does his deal, or is his pre-practice preparation and this and that with Reggie and Dwight. So it was just a very, very enlightening time to be a first-time NFL coach and to be around some goats, so to speak, and to watch them work and do their craft. And so I felt I needed to preface that when I start to talk about Adam Vinatieri and his professionalism, his ability to not only relate to the specialists and the special teams player, but to everybody on that team. You know, one of the hardest workers for his position. You know, you watch his routine, and you get a chance to talk to some guys after a while about what they do and how they do it, and how consistent they've been, and they get inside their mind a little bit. Just so impressed with his ability to stay focused on the task at hand, to only be in the moment and not have things that had happened previously, whether it's in that practice day or in his career, affect what he was about to do at that moment. I just had a chance to learn so much just by observing guys like him and how he was in the locker room and how he was on game day. And, I don't know how many game winning Super Bowl kicks or playoff kicks the guys had, but he had a ton for us. And like I said, I think the makeup of the man and how he went about his business related to how he played on Sunday afternoons. And then you got a guy like Pat McAfee, who was a little bit younger, cannon for a leg. You know, he did the punting and he did the kickoff, the kickoffs, and Adam was just a place kicker. But Mac was, I mean, he was the, you know, you felt his presence, just like when you watch ESPN now and he's on game day and he's jumping into a river at Baylor, or he's doing this, that, and the other. That's how Pat was. He's just a little bit loose, so to speak, but was equally as effective. And having those two guys, almost like Adam is the grandfather and Pat as the stepson, so to speak, you know, along with Justin Snow as the snapper, was just an interesting dynamic to be around. And, you know, in their own ways, they were successful, but they kind of got to the end point totally different.
Absolutely. My interaction with Pat McAfee was at an early age. He came to my kicking camp at the Orange Bowl. This was his senior in high school. He was out of Plum, Pennsylvania. A lot of people don't know the story, but he went to a casino and found his way in underage, won some money, booked a flight, didn't tell his parents, booked our kicking camp online, took a flight down to the Orange Bowl, and I got to meet him that day. And it's still to this day, I can't forget his performance. He hit a 70-yard field goal in the Orange Bowl in front of a number of people, because at the time, college coaches could, in fact, be at those camps no longer. But, you know, he earned his scholarship that day. West Virginia offered him on the spot. By the time he flew home, he was talking to his parents about, first of all, where he'd been, you know, because he really wasn't supposed to be there. But, you know, it worked out. And I think that what people need to realize about people like Pat McAfee, and there's several personalities in the NFL that they seem lighthearted and they're having fun out there, but people don't see him 6 days out of the week. And what I remember about Pat specifically was he was the first person to elect to take a rep. You know, there was a couple hundred kids there that day, and he was always the first. And every transition to a new thing we were going to evaluate them on, he wanted to go first because he was prepared. That's what screamed prepared to me, is this kid thought about this situation prior to right now, because a lot of these kids are thinking about the situation for the first time right now. And those are the kids that are going to go second and third. And I think that's important to a coach or someone evaluating talent, is it resonates to them that this person is in fact prepared and they believe in themselves. So I think that, you know, Pat, he's looked at sometimes as a funny guy, But I think there's two sides to people like him, because people like him don't experience success like that unless there's a time to grind. And I think he finds time to do both. I think it's neat that you got to see two guys that are some legends and that have done so much for the specialist community, because both those guys are in fact a catalyst, right? They really were the final straw to say that we are here and we're here to stay. And I think that everyone embraces us because we're difference makers. I wanted to transition to your third and three. I think most people are well aware of what you've done and the teams you've been on and your experience there, but I think really important to touch on what you're doing now and what in fact third and three is. I'm about to experience third and three for the first time next Wednesday night with you in a round table. And I'm really excited about that. But basically, I want you to tell me and the audience a little bit about what third and three is, what it means to you, what your intentions are in using it, and where it's going.
Well, third and three started off, I'll kind of give you, and it's only been, you know, we're 4 months or so in the making, but it started off really simply as me being on a Zoom call with some of my buddies who coach high school football and just kind of talking through some things one evening. And my son jumped in the room. I was in the office. He kind of walked in because he was home from school. And, you know, when I got off the call, he says, "I think you got something there." I said, "What do you mean?" He says, "I think you got a business there. You know, you're spending these time with these coaches and you're helping them grow. And I think there's something there." I was like, "Whatever." You know what I mean? And then to make a long story short, that, you know, whatever turned into where we are today, which is, you know, third and three is what I like to call the most comprehensive online learning platform for high school and college coaches. We bring coaches from across the country together to mentor and for fellowship. And the way we do that is we put on weekly clinics, and those clinics range from X's and O's, philosophy, scheme, things like, you know, grading your players and player evaluations and after action reports, to studying plays and schemes. It started off really offensive centric with my background. And now with my network of coaches, we basically cover every position in depth, whether it's the running back position that obviously is my expertise, to having different lectures and a quarterback school where we can get quarterback coaches together. And some of the things that we really did that took it to a different level is not just having a particular clinic on a subject and talk about that particular subject, but the thing that I think really made us different is getting opposing views from coaches on each side of the ball. So, for example, as opposed to me doing a talk on, let's say, the power play from a running back perspective, it's not just running back coaches on that call, but then we get linebacker coaches on the call. And then we can listen to linebacker coaches talk about defending certain things or some of the keys they see. So what it ends up doing, it ends up being an environment where coaches can grow and learn not only from their peers at their position, but their peers, their counterparts, let's call it, on the other side of the ball. So we like to pair wide receiver coaches with defensive back coaches, O-line and D-line, running back coaches and or tight end coaches with linebacker coaches, and have those type of discussions that are slightly different from a normal clinic format. And then the one thing that I'd like to let people understand is just the interaction, and everything becomes a discussion. It's not just one guy talking about this is how we do it and that's it, and you just listen to them and you don't have a chance to share your thoughts or interact. So our roundtables have become a little bit popular. Obviously, with everybody starting to play football again, it's been a little bit challenging here this season, you know, just because of, you have some guys that are in season, some guys that aren't in season. In the spring, you'll have some schools that'll be in season and some aren't. So this calendar year is a little bit different. But I believe third and three is a sustainable business that really is allowing coaches to grow because they get expert coaching. Last night we had a defensive back session, and we had the defensive back coach from San Jose State, Eric Williams, talk about press coverage and why you press, and went through his techniques and stuff. And so for a high school coach, that team works on those techniques, and to be able to hear it and see it and feel it and learn something, I think that helps guys grow, and it benefits everybody. And like I said, every week we will do different style of presentations, and we have the special teams and specialists involved as well. So anybody any coach can find some value with the talks and discussions that we provide on third and three. And then there's some also some professional development things that we do as well. We had a well-attended seminar talking about recruiting during COVID for college personnel people about it was about 2 months ago, and we're going to do in November, we're going to have another professional development series called Ascending in the Profession from a personnel and a coaching standpoint. And we're going to put together some nice panels and talk about the way you ascend in the profession, whether you're on the personnel side of things or whether you're on the coach side of things. So I'm excited about those things coming down the pike here next month.
I want to touch on the last thing you just said, recruiting. So in my opinion, high school coaches are inundated with responsibility, from discipline to grades to other campus responsibilities that they all have, to practice, to transportation issues on Friday nights, to budget. That's a major concern at most of these high schools. They never have enough resources or support. So with that being said, all those added responsibilities currently that are going on, a supplementary responsibility that I feel is probably most important that these coaches are deficient in is the promotion of their athletes to the appropriate places. Okay. I feel like it's very cookie cutter, if you will, in terms of they all have a huddle profile. They all send it out to a mass quantity of people, almost none of which get received because, again, it's got to be a personal connection, in my opinion. It's got to be a referral from a head coach to a college coach who already has a relationship. Could you give me a little bit of your insight as to effective ways for a kid that, let's say he's not a five-star, let's say he's not a major Division I prospect, but let's say he could most definitely play in the FCS level, okay, and he's a good student, he's doing all the right things, but the disconnect here is, how do I get seen? How do I get exposure? How do I not only use my high school coach, but maybe independently promote myself? Could you give me some thoughts as to a new way of thinking, perhaps?
Yeah, I think from a kid in recruiting in general, I think it's a combination of the player and the coach. It's not just the coach doing everything. I don't think it's just the player doing everything. I think there's got to be a combination of both trying to get their either film seen or their name out or what have you. So that's number one, because when colleges come into a school as a college recruiter and you go into a school, you may know the one or two guys you really want to know about, but in most schools there's going to be a couple other guys maybe you should know about. And if you're one of those high school kids where the coach thinks this college should know about you, I think there has to be conversation at the appropriate time. Always during the season may not be the appropriate time, but there has to be conversation with a player to his coach in terms of, what level do you think I can play at? What schools have come in? Is there anybody that's asked about me? Who can I follow up with? Okay, so two schools were in and two schools asked about me. Well, I'm going to then follow up with that with some information as well. But I think every time that's the initial look that a college is going to have on a student athlete is going to be, let me see what they look like from their supposed highlights. And then if there's enough there, then I'll dig further. I think how you put together your huddle tape, it's huge in all honesty. As being a college recruiter, time is a factor and you always don't have a lot of time. So if I was looking at a kid's highlight tape, I'd want to see if it took like 3 or 4 minutes before I really saw something that got me excited, I may want to move on from that kid. But early on, if I saw some really, really good plays, it would intrigue me to continue to watch. So I really believe with huddle and the way you can work that system is put your best stuff, your best highlights first. I wouldn't do it by game in the season. Oh, this was our first game, so I put these highlights, or this was my second game. I would put your very best highlights first, because that's going to draw the attention and hopefully keep the attention of the person that's watching your film. So that's the number one thing I would do. I would be extremely persistent as it pertains to sending out emails. Eventually you would learn, hopefully, who's the recruiter in your area. Or if you don't and you get online and you see just the director of recruiting or those people, if you're interested in a school, I would send emails, send your highlight clips, send your transcript, be proactive in the recruiting process if you're a guy that's maybe, let's call it, under the radar, so to speak. And then, like I said, I think it's important that you have conversations with your coach to try to have a realistic ideal of where colleges may see you. You may see yourself and your parents may see you in a different light than the colleges see you. And sometimes people have they get a bad perspective on, this kid's getting recruited. I'm better than him in my mind. I should be getting recruited by that school. Well, that's not always how things work. So I think if you have a real good understanding of maybe what the level is you can play at, your coach kind of gives you the same feedback. When you put your film together, put your best stuff first, in my opinion, and then be persistent in trying to recruit schools that you have interest in as well. Don't let them just be doing the recruiting. I would be pushing my stuff to them as well. So those would be a few just ideals I would have for the players that are listening to this podcast.
I think those are all valuable. I agree wholeheartedly. I think that, every week you should consolidate that. You might kick off a few of the week one highlights because week two took over. You should have a mid-season highlight. You should have an end of season highlight. If a coach wants to see a particular game, you should have the game's highlight saved. You can create multiple playlists, right? And I think that you should have those readily available because, like you mentioned, if you get a text or a DM on Twitter and you want to see his Carroll City game from last week, just send me the highlights from that particular game because you know that he played some dogs that night. I want to see how he played ball all four quarters against a legitimate program. So I think there's value in having a highlight of game one. I think there's equal, if not more, value to having like a weeks one through three consolidated your best stuff in the first 30 seconds type stuff. But you're right, Coach. I think that there's not a lack of respect, but it's just an ignorance to the fact that you are limited in time. Especially as a college football coach, you are limited in time because one small part of your day, if at all, is going to be to jump on your computer and look at a few of the prospects that you want to see from the previous week.
I'll add this too, I think could be helpful for a young man. And this is really position specific. It's not necessarily geared toward just a specialist, but position specific. One of the things that could be helpful as well, because it almost, I don't want to say it fools your eye, but let's say you had a pretty good sophomore year, pretty good junior year, and a pretty good senior year. And through all those years, you have some pretty good plays. I've seen kids that have put together like a high school highlight tape. And so now maybe you had 15 really good plays your senior year, and you had those on highlight, but all of a sudden you had 15 really good highlights as a senior, and you had another 12 as a junior, you had maybe 4 or 5 as a sophomore. Well, you put all those plays together on a tape and someone watches it, and now they're seeing 30 really good plays of you. That may give them a different picture of you. So that's one thing I've seen too that I thought was really good is a culmination kind of tape and have that almost be your feature tape. Because think about a pro player whose career spans several years. And we could use any pro player, but, this year, one of these pro players could be playing really well. Aaron Donald. Let's just use Aaron Donald. I'm going to use Aaron Donald. Okay. Obviously, this year he's playing at a high level. But guess what? Last year he played at a high level in the year before, and there's probably several highlights from 2 years ago and several highlights from last year that you would say, oh, my God, that was a signature play. I remember that play, and he did this, that, and the other. Well, from your high school career, put all those things together, and it just makes your highlight. So that's another little tip, I think, is you could put together a sophomore, junior, and senior kind of package together that would look better than any one of those single years.
That's a great point. I don't think I do that with my athletes. I do like annual at most, and I go from there. I go like quarterly, weeks 1 through 4, and maybe cut up weeks 1 and give me 3 or 4 of the best moments. And that way you can put something like that together, right? I think it's organization. I think it's planning like anything else. It's not just going to be slapped together. It's going to take time. It's tedious. But
yeah,
the key is to spend enough time to where it's effective, right? To where when you sit down, the first 20 seconds will, in fact, generate some interest from you, and it'll make you want to see a little bit more, and you might even give them some direction. Hey, I looked at this link. Do you have like a half season, like a collective highlight? And then it gives him some direction. But I think the interest has to be initiated through the first 20 seconds of something, right?
Yeah. And the reason I'm just using, you know, I'm just sharing some of my experiences. You know, we've had kids when I was coaching at the University of Pittsburgh that, you know, that weren't happy and, you know, were wanted to transfer out. And so I remember one kid coming to me and saying, "Coach, I need to put together, you know, can you help me put together these highlights so I can send them to these other FCS schools?" Because, you know, I was like, "Oh, no problem." And so he starts to go through, we're sitting in the office and he wants to go through these games where at the end of the game, he would got in and had a few carries. And I'm like, "We're not starting there." I said, "We're going back to these scrimmages and practice." Because I said, "I've seen you make a ton of plays." And so we started to put together his film, and it was like scrimmage stuff and different things where he had great runs that never showed up on a Saturday afternoon because he was sitting behind some guys, but he had shown in practice. So like I said, we went and put together and I found all his best practice runs that I could remember. I said, "Oh my God, oh, I remember that one. Oh, remember this play versus here?" And we put those things on and then we interspersed some of the game film. And that's what we ended up, you know, sharing with other colleges, because to me, it's, they just want to see you. They just want to see the skill set. It doesn't matter if it shows up in practice or a game, but all of a sudden you – Darrell Revis, when I was at the University of Pittsburgh, he's one guy that comes to mind, and let me see if I can think of another one that first, so I can make this example. Okay, perfect. Got two of them. Okay, so Darrell Revis and Donovan McNabb. Those guys would do things in practice that you had never seen before, and it was like, "Holy cow, did you just see that?" And it didn't show up on a Saturday game day. And that's, I guess, the point I'm trying to make. There's moments that happen on the practice fields all the time that you just scratch your head like, "Did you just see that?" And so I just wanted to make sure I shared with that player at that particular time. Whether that play happened on Thursday in practice or if that was Saturday in the game, that's like a great, great thing that just happened there. Make sure you highlight that as you're trying to show your ability off to someone else.
And that's a great point, because 20 years ago, I would have countered that thinking. But now every high school films almost everything in a team setting. They film inter-squad scrimmages. Sometimes they even film like an inside drill, you know, and you could do something incredibly well in limited space, you know, split second decision making that would probably jump off the screen to you.
Mm-hmm.
Right. And that's invaluable. I think that's a great point, Coach.
And I don't know if Chris Rippon, when he was on, shared his Olindo Mari kicking in a park.
Yes.
Not even on a football field, you know, being discovered. So there's a lot of different ways to show off your ability. You know, some guys, I've seen guys that do these 7-on-7s and put some of that stuff on their highlight tapes. And there was a big defensive end one year who was a defensive end. I mean, that's what you were going to recruit this kid at. But he puts a few of his 7-on-7 highlight clips of him running routes and catching the ball on the tape. And it's like, "Holy cow, look at this big joker." You know, we thought he was, you know, a run-stuffing defensive end, but he's out there playing tight end on a 7-on-7 team, running corner routes, this, that, and the other, catching the ball. So you can just get a different opinion seeing different things. You know, working with the guys from Tracking Football last year, which is a recruiting service, we would see kids, like there was this one kid, I won't forget his name, a kid named Johnny Mitchell down in Louisiana, who was an underrated kid, an interior lineman. So he played center and guard, and he also played defensive tackle. He played both ways for his high school team. And he's a, you know, 6'3"-ish, 260-poundish athlete. The first highlight on his highlight tape is him high jumping. So to see a 260-pound kid go and high jump in a meet, and it's like, "Holy cow." And then you put the film on, and then it's him, you know, kind of, I won't say mauling people, but getting after people pretty good. So I was like, "Man, if I'm a college recruiter and I'm looking at this kid and I just see this athleticism in this kid in terms of whether he's playing basketball or he's doing some type of track stuff, and then you see good football." So anything that's good that highlights who you are, I think you put that stuff on a tape, because as an evaluator, the more things that you can see from a positive attribute, the more you're going to like a kid.
I think that might have been the most impactful thing you said in terms of recruiting is it's important to be unique, be an outlier, because those people are remembered. Those are people you don't forget about.
Yeah.
Well, Coach, I just want to thank you so much for your time. I wanted to take a second and have you share with the audience ways they can reach you.
Our website for 3rd and 3 is just like you said, 3rd and 3.com. And that will have all of our information in terms of our clinics, when they are, what they are. We have several training videos as well, where if you don't make a clinic session, you can also get that information from the training videos. And then on Twitter, we're at 3rd and 3 Football. At Facebook, it's 3rd and 3 Football. And on Instagram, it's at 3rd and 3 Football. So those would be the social handles, you know, and then really you can get a hold of me via email at dlwalk33@gmail.com would be the easiest way as well.
Thank you so much, Coach. Well, that was episode 5 of Fourth Down Focus. Just reminding the audience that if you want to get a hold of us, fourthdownu.com is our website. You can go ahead and email us there with show topics or guest suggestions. I'd be more than happy to check you out. If you want to find me on social media, I'm at 4THDOWNU. That's Fourth Down U. We're on Facebook, Instagram, Twitter, LinkedIn, probably somewhere else, but I can't think of it right now. Just want to thank you guys for your time and have a great day. I look forward to seeing you guys next time. Take care.